You're listening to the End of Sport podcast, a podcast about harm, labor, and inequality in capitalist sport with your hosts, Johanna Mellis, Nathan Coleman-Lamb, and Derek Silva. The End of Sport podcast is a proud member of the Harbinger Media Network, your left podcast community. Find us in great company with over 60 other shows at harbingermedianetwork.com. And as always, if you're enjoying the show, please feel free to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform and please leave us a 5-star review, as those always help us reach a wider audience. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy this episode of The End of Sport.
And welcome to another episode of the End of Sport podcast. This is Johanna Mellis here with you today. And right now I'm recording. It's Saturday night, April 13th. As a historian, I always think it's important to contextualize things, but I also think that this is about a development that was announced on Friday. And I have a feeling that by the time we are able to edit and release the episode, that there may have been quite a bit of kind of additional developments that have come out. So maybe we will update the recording. Maybe we will release this as is. It's hard for me to record during the week right now. And also I've just been stewing and thinking about this all day. So I wanted to get off Twitter and record something that might be, I don't want to say productive, not as if, you know, talking on Twitter isn't productive, but something that would sort of form a more coherent, format for people to listen to and consume. So right today, I'm going to be talking about this case that just dropped yesterday about the University of Kentucky and their swimming program. And it is about the ex-coach Lars Jorgensen, who was a sexual predator. And I'll also be talking about transphobia and other things as well. Now, off the top, I want to say this comes from an article by Katie Strang at The Athletic, which we will be linking in the show notes. Also, SwimSwam has been kind of sharing like bits and pieces of the Athletic article because the Athletic's behind a paywall, and SwimSwam has been releasing bits and pieces here and there. So if you can't get into the Athletic, then that's another way to learn about it. So it's essential to include lots of content warnings: sexual assault, rape, physical, psychological abuse, transphobia, obviously misogyny, fatphobia, and much more. Now, this announcement on Friday, the article came out, I believe, the same day that a lawsuit was announced on behalf of two former University of Kentucky swimmers that talked about former coach at University of Kentucky, Lars Jorgensen, that the school had, quote, fostered a toxic, sexually hostile environment within the sport swim program that enabled him to prey on, sexually harass, and commit horrific sexual assaults and violent rapes against young female coaches and collegiate athletes who were relying on him. So first and foremost, this is about really, really horrific crimes of sexual assault and predation. It is also about other forms of abuse, because these things rarely are, you know, isolated from other forms of abuse and discrimination in the swimming environment, perhaps more so in some ways than other. I mean, it's steeped in white supremacy. It is white supremacist, as we've talked about in prior episodes, although it's been quite some time. Within its white supremacy is transphobia, fatphobia, sexual assault, and this runs rife in the history. And I also want to say that my solidarity and the solidarity of End of Sport goes out to each and every victim. When a couple of people reach out to me about this article and said that I should read it, I admittedly am like, not again. Like, I have to sort of prepare myself each and every time. Not that I, as I said before, I've been very, 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 very fortunate beyond belief to not have been sexually assaulted anyway. But I've been sexually harassed a whole lot, and it takes a lot to talk about it. And people know that I am someone that not that I like to talk about it, but that I feel it's really essential to talk about it, which I appreciate that, but it is kind of draining and it can be a lot sometimes. And it was a couple of years ago, but now, you know, it's not quite as in the news anymore. So even this case, I don't want to say it took me by surprise, but I hadn't seen reporting done on a case quite in depth in at least a couple months, if not 6 months. And now I'm human, so I could have missed things. But yeah, yes, like I said, solidarity goes out to everybody who has been and sadly will be a victim just because sexual assault's not going away anytime soon. We are all reading about it in sport yet again. And I hope that also any survivors that are listening, I hope that you should know, I hope that you all know that like you have supporters and you have people who believe you and we are some of them. And also this also includes trans people who endure transphobia day in and day out. There are, I don't know how many states right now, but there are many states in the US as we've talked about, and many other people have talked about, where transgender people can't be themselves, where the state wants to actively eliminate them from existing, which so it's a genocide against trans people. And I also want to say that research shows that transgender people are 4 times more likely to be sexually assaulted than cis women such as myself. 4 times. And I think we should sit with that, because even though sports such as swimming are really genuinely trying to ban trans women from ever competing, ever even dipping a toe in the pool, basically, the few that are swimmers, they're facing such a hostile, like truly hostile environment, which also includes a sexually hostile environment, because people think it is okay to sexually violate transgender people, for lots of reasons. So yeah, just all the solidarity. And I said this on Twitter, I wish this were not the case, but the article that I wrote for The Guardian last summer about why cisgender swimmers need to be locking arms in solidarity with trans people, still relevant. We're coming up on a year of that article this summer, and I don't see the issue going away anytime soon. So if there are any listeners who like have any doubt, if you come across someone who is spewing transphobia and is talking about it within the context of sport, show them this fucking article. Talk to them about what happens. Have some details on hand, because the people who say that transgender women, they usually misgender them, that they don't belong in sport, they have an advantage, et cetera, they're not talking about this because they don't actually give a shit. And I should say, I'm going to be swearing a lot today. They don't give a shit about anybody's safety. They don't actually care about women's sports. So really, like, they don't actually care about women's sports, period. But there are like women who will come to me and say, hey, you know, like, I'm really struggling to wrap my head around this. Like, I want to support this, but the fairness factor and the competition and the scholarships, like, I can't get over that. And like, I'll address that. And I'll say, you know, well, we just need to make college free for anybody. Maybe we should take sports out of college altogether. Like, there are many things that we could do, but also when it comes to sexual assault, transphobia is not addressing this because they don't want to address this. Because in reality, what anti-trans people are doing is they are protecting sexual predators such as Lars Jorgensen. And one of the things, and I was going to get to this later, but because I'm going down this path already, one of the things that has pissed me off so much about this case, like, I'm obviously pissed about this in and of itself for the victims, but one of the people who swam at University of Kentucky, who swam under Lars Jorgensen, who as of last summer defended Lars Jorgensen, is none other than Riley Gaines, who has made her entire career trying to profit from spewing anti-trans shit and harassing trans people, such as her obsession with Leah Thomas. She and Leah Thomas tied for 5th place and in the two in a free, and I think it was 2021. She's a sore loser and she has not gotten over it. So she's obsessed with Leah Thomas, done really creepy things, and is inciting violence against trans people. So, you know, a lot of us have been saying for a while that the anti-trans movement is deflecting from, victims of sexual assault and deflecting from sexual predators and sexual assaulters and rapists. And like, this is evidence that they actually are doing that. And as far as I know, when I've talked to a few people, like Riley Gaines has not spoken out about this. Like she defended Lars last summer in Instagram posts. I'll talk about this later. But that was last summer around July 2023 when he resigned from University of Kentucky and people were talking about it in those circles. So I understand that there is research that connects the anti-trans movement to the backlash against Me Too. And it's something I just got a book. I had like two books that I need to read and I just need to find time with teaching and all that stuff. But it's something that I need to look into because I just become more and more convinced about this all the time. Whereas like 2 years ago, I was like, oh, it sucks that, you know, Nancy Hogshead Makar, like famed, you know, sexual assault, rape survivor, and also like advocate, you know, and trying to root out sexual abuse. Like, it's weird that she's understanding your experiences and like connecting with transphobia. It's not fucking weird. Like, there's a logic here. Anyways, I'm digressing from even the outline I made for myself, but I want, before I get into the details of the suit, there are a couple more things off the top that I want to talk about because I'm afraid if I leave them to the end, they're going to get a bit buried or lost. And I know people's attention spans. I know people's attention spans for like dense podcasts like ours. So these are some things I just wanted to share. And one is a statement that comes at the very end of the Athletic article that I think is really powerful and reminds us that like athletes are humans first and foremost. Now, this is a statement from Briggs Alexander. Alexander is one of Jorgensen's victims. Not only is he one of Jorgensen's victims, but he also transitioned from female to male over the course of being groomed and sexually assaulted by Jorgensen. So this actually follows what I was just saying with Riley Gaines thoroughly. I don't know. And that like we're talking about Jorgensen like assaulting a trans person and assaulting someone who I can only imagine going through this transition process was in a really vulnerable moment in their lives. I mean, I'm not trans, so I don't totally know, but I just imagine that to be a very vulnerable time. And the statement from Alexander that he made against Jorgensen that I think is really important. He said, quote, he meaning Jorgensen, he had so much power over me. I don't want any athlete to feel like they have no control in their life. They have a choice. You're not an athlete. You're a person, end quote. And I think that's really key because even I use the word athletes, I use the label athlete all the time, but like people are sports people. People in sport are sports people. That's what I'm using in the phrase I'm currently using in my book, but they're people first and foremost. And I think when we define a person by like their occupation, first and foremost, and do that consistently, I think that can lead to some problems, potentially help slide into, you know, it can slide into some problems because people don't see them as humans. And here is Alexander who went through awful, awful things that I cannot even imagine, and saying, I don't want athletes to feel like they have no autonomy. Athletes have a choice. They have a voice. You're a person. Like, I just think that's really amazing that he said that and that the piece, the Katie Strang's piece ended with this. Another thing I wanted to mention before getting to, the suit, I mentioned Riley Gaines earlier. Now this suit, this lawsuit, comes only a few weeks after a lawsuit was filed against NCAA. This lawsuit was organized by ICONS, which stands for the Independent Council on Women's Sport. And the lawsuit represents Riley Gaines and 15 other cisgender female college athletes. In this suit, they are trying to get the NCAA to ban transgender women from all sports, flat out ban. Now, ICONS notoriously hates transgender people. And I mentioned her earlier, I think, but famed sexual assault survivor and real desperado, Nancy Hogshead Makar, has been a big mover within ICONS. So their organization of the lawsuit's not a surprise. The fact that Riley Gaines is included in the lawsuit is not a surprise. I believe, if I remember correctly, that a few of the people on the case went to the University of Kentucky. I need to double check on that. And they also, the lawsuit also demands that all titles and positions that transgender women earned, that they be retroactively revoked. So they want to erase them from swimming history. Just, you know, not, sorry, swimming history, but from all sport history, just erase them. Just like states are trying to erase them from existence. So I think I said this earlier, but I am angry. I'm enraged. And honestly, today, as I was grading and I kept getting distracted from grading because I was just so angry as I read this, I was angry over and over and over again. And I just thinking like, of course, like we know this happens. Like we only know what happens based on what people actually feel comfortable coming forward with reporting or saying or whatever. There are stories that I've heard that relate to my own experiences that are not about me, but relate to that like were going on around me. And like, I still have nightmares about them. I didn't know what was going on at the time, but like learning about them in the last couple years and asking these questions about like, what the fuck is going on in youth sport, in college sport, of course, Olympic sport. It's awful. And then of course, like the way that it's intertwined with transphobia and the anti-trans movement is just, it's just really angering because we know exactly what they are doing. And I really encourage people, if and when, because it is only a matter of time, if and when somebody in your life, even if they come to you in good faith, which they may, if and when they come to you saying, you know, I'm having a hard time getting on board in support of trans people. Like, you know, I know that they're people and they should exist, but I just, like I said, I can't get past the competition thing and the scholarships and the fairness, blah, 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 blah. It's not even really about fairness. It needs to be about actual safety. I mean, and it's about other things too, but like we're talking about the actual safety of everybody. And that safety also includes the safety of cisgender women, which is what, again, I wrote in that piece last summer, and also the safety of transgender people, which clearly people from both groups were harmed here. So, this gendered kind of patriarchal, violent assault. It's just, this is not the price to pay for athletic success. Sport is not worth it. Sport is sport. It's a way for people to move their bodies and do it vis-a-vis one another. And sometimes with other people. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. So now I'll dive into the story. So I'm going to give a bit of a timeline within the last year, and then I'm going to kind of go through the allegations that have been levied against him. And then I'll go through like the timeline of Jorgensen's assaults, according to the article, as best as I can understand. The article like does some chronology and kind of goes back and forth a little bit for the purposes of like the narrative, but it was a little bit hard for me to follow at times just because I usually need like a straightforward chronology. So Jorgensen resigned last summer, I believe 2023, I believe July 2023, something like that. And he received a $75,000 settlement. $75,000 settlement. What a piece of shit. He is a cisgender straight white man, as far as we know. I mean, cisgender, you know, straight, as far as we know, he's obviously white. And in November of 2023, so about what, 4 or 5 months later, he appeared in USA Swimming Safe Sport database for quote, unspecified allegations of misconduct. Now there's a lot to be said about the huge problems with safe sport, with the safe sport kind of branches within each of the national governing bodies of sport. USA Swimming developed the first one, I believe in the early 2000s when it started conducting background checks due to the sheer onslaught of like the hundreds of cases of sexual predators who were, surprise, surprise, cisgender white men largely. And I'm guessing they were straight. So that appeared in November, 2023. And according to the lawsuit, the allegations against Jorgensen include there's a kind of one big grouping under sexual assault and harassment. And again, another content warning. If this is something that's going to be really like upsetting for you, I feel free to like skip ahead because I do want to list these things because they are massive in number and I want to contextualize them. So in terms of sexual assault and harassment, they include raping two swim team members after a Christmas party that he hosted at his home. One of the rape victims said that he also raped them at a hotel on a team trip and also masturbated in front of them in his office. He also sent a member of the women's team a picture of his sexually aroused genitals, as well as videos of him masturbating. He also sent suggestive messages to swimmers on social media. He told personal sex stories to swim team members. He talked about women he wanted to sleep with. He asked swimmers about their sexual experiences. He commented on swimmers' breast sizes and how they looked in swimsuits, which I experienced that, and I saw that as a swimmer and as a coach. He also asked swimmers about their menstrual cycles. Check, that happened when I was a swimmer and also happened as a coach. He also asked a member if she was on birth control. Now, that is the extent of the sexual assault and sexual harassment ones. Now, there are other ones to mention because sexual assault and harassment, is both of them are usually preceded by and done in concert with other forms of discrimination that work together to break down people's boundaries and help groom them. And if you want to know a little bit more about grooming, kind of steps that groomers will take, we did an episode, gosh, I can't remember how long was ago now, with Kim Shore, who's amazing and awesome. And she's been a huge player within the fight against sexual abuse in Canadian sport that's been going really, really strong for the last couple of years, stronger than the movement in the US. So I did an interview with her where she broke some of this down. But some of these acts that he did and the allegations were, he implemented punishment workouts. He degraded and body shamed swimmers. For example, he set up these like bod pods, which I have actually heard about similar things that were used at UF back when I was a grad student that have been used like a couple years prior. So I guess this would have been like the late 2000s, maybe early 2010, something around there. I don't know if it was a body pod, but this like this machine that would like weigh people and like determine their body fat. So according to getting in this body pod, they would be assigned a set body percentage between 10 to 16% body fat. And the athletes would have food withheld from them after poor performances. And athletes would be assigned extra workouts if their body fat exceeded this whatever arbitrary percentage that he gave them. So, you know, lots of psychological trauma, psychological abuse, fat phobia. At least one victim said that they developed an eating disorder as well as anxiety and depression. And I imagine those were pretty widespread on the team. Now, this is what has been reported. I mentioned this earlier, I think. And there are always more stories that are not reported that are not included in lawsuits. So, you know, again, for the people that might be like, oh, I don't, there's not enough evidence, this happened, whatever. There's always more that hasn't been reported. Of course, like most sport sexual predators in and without sport and beyond sport, he had started to do these things before he got to Kentucky in 2012. Multiple people took pains to alert University of Kentucky athletics and swimming about his predatory behavior. And instead, both UK athletics and the head swim coach at the time, I think his name is Connolly. I don't have his first name written down. Anyways, Gary Connolly. Both Gary Connolly, the head UK swim coach, and UK athletic director Mitch Barnhard were made aware of these allegations, and they instead chose to put women and other swimmers in danger and chose to elevate Jorgensen into a position of power. Now, Connolly and Barnhart, right? So Connolly was the UK head swim coach who hired Jorgensen. And then Barnhart, Mitch Barnhart, is the athletic director at University of Kentucky. They both received warnings in 2012 before Jorgensen arrived about things that had happened when he'd been coaching at the University of Toledo. In June of 2012, an assistant coach at the University of Toledo told Connolly and Barnhart that Jorgensen had a sexual relationship with a swimmer who was swimming for him. Connolly reportedly followed up with the woman who said that she'd entered in a relationship with him after she stopped swimming. According to the Athletic article, Connolly responded by saying that it bothered him a little bit. Quote, "But as I'm sure you know this, this is not an uncommon occurrence that there is a relationship between a coach and ex-swimmer." That is just so maddening. It's just so maddening. I think it was summer 2020, right after Athletic A came out. I did an interview with a woman, blanking on her name, who swam in the UK for a while. And she had a lot of stories about coaches having relationships with, this is the 1980s or during the Cold War, about coaches having relationships with swimmers. There are cases in the U.S. of that happening. There are cases of coaches impregnating swimmers, having babies with them. So this is something that absolutely was a common occurrence. And I meant to look this up before recording, but if I remember correctly, this is also around the time that Sean Hutchinson, who was elevated to an Olympic swim coach position, that he had groomed and was sexually assaulting Ariana Kukors, who was an Olympic athlete. I cannot remember I think she won some medals. I can't remember off the top of my head, but this, I believe, was all happening in the late 2010s and into the 2020s. And Kukors came out about this a couple of years ago. So yeah, sure. Not an uncommon occurrence. That does not make it a good thing. Obvious. Yeah, that should be obvious. So that was June of 2012 and October 2014. Former, Toledo softball coach repeated the point it reached out to the University of Kentucky and repeated the point that Jorgensen had been in a relationship with an athlete and that the woman had filed a wrongful termination lawsuit against University of Toledo. I didn't look into this lawsuit, so other people can. It's linked in the Athletic piece. So 2 years later, this was announced. Then fast forward to August 2019, this is a few years, the Me Too movement had been going on for some time. So this timing isn't exactly a surprise. So two swim coaches at San Jose State reported to their own Title IX office at San Jose State. They reported allegations that they'd heard about Jorgensen, Jorgensen's relationship with the woman at the University of Toledo, if I understand correctly, but also reported that he'd sexually assaulted a woman on his swim staff at Kentucky. That officer at San Jose State alerted a counterpart at the University of Kentucky. Once again, as always, people knew and people reported him. One victim filed a lawsuit against the school, and an entirely third party reported an allegation, went out of their way to report something that, as far as I know, had nothing to do with him. You see people actually trying to use the structures that are available to them. And then what did UK Athletics do? Nothing, as far as I know. And it was only in 2023 that he left the program by resigning. Now, a little bit more history. He had resigned from the University of Toledo. Apparently, people were gossiping about him. They saw him with this woman that he was in a relationship with, likely sexually assaulting. And so he resigned from Toledo and he moved to Tennessee. He'd swam at the University of Tennessee under coach John Tremblay. And so he moved to Tennessee, it seems like, to kind of hopefully get a job there. Now you might ask he was made, interim head coach at the University of Tennessee. So you might ask, why was he able to take this position as interim head coach? Well, the answer is because the Tennessee head coach, who had been Jorgensen's coach, his name was John Tremblay. John Tremblay was fired after sending sexually explicit messages. So it's just like again and again and again, like it's just this cesspool of just, yeah, of awfulness. Okay, so now I'm going to summarize some of what the victims endured. I went through the list of allegations earlier. I'm not going to go through the specific incidents of like each assault that the Athletic cover article covers, some of which have been reported by SWAM, partly just to like save myself because it's really hard. I've also been talking for about 30 minutes now, and I want this to be like on the shorter side episode wise. But I'm going to try to point out a few key things. One thing is that he assaulted coaches who worked under him, and not just people who were swimmers. Now, several of the victims, or at least the two that came forward, seem to have been swimmers who he hired as coaches, which I think is a very telling dynamic that you're transferring, that you have this long-term relationship. And the swimmer coach relationship is one thing. We've talked about that a lot in the podcast, but we have not really talked about the coach on coach relationship. And I really have not heard, I'm racking my brain. I don't know if I've heard of any cases of coaches assaulting coaches, but I imagine that it happens quite a bit because the power dynamics are enormous. Because a male coach such as Jorgensen is going to have access to all of the connections that a young female coach or a young coach in general might need to develop their career. Swimming is a very small world. There is not much money in coaching. So the scarcity of resources makes connections a really essential thing to have and makes relationships like really make or break one's career. So one victim who he raped said, quote, "I felt like I didn't have a voice. I felt like if I told people, I wouldn't be able to be in a profession I was so passionate about and loved. That was held over my head, and I was told that quite often." So yeah, I mean, there you go. That's the power dynamics right there. So yeah, I wanted to mention the coach the athlete to coach dynamic. And I'm guessing there's some interesting research about this, me not being, a sociologist or sports management person, but I imagine there's some interesting work on this. Now I'm going to talk a bit about Briggs Alexander, who I mentioned before. Briggs Alexander, as far as I remember, was the only person that, the Athletic article named, like included their actual name and didn't just keep them anonymous. All strength and solidarity to all the victims. And I'm just like particularly like impressed with Alexander for coming forward and the way that he's done. There very well may be like really key reasons why the others did not. But he is the one who did. So I think that's really important to mention. As I said earlier, during Alexander trained under Jorgensen as when Alexander was a female, and then during his time as one of Jorgensen's coaches, he transitioned to be a trans man. Alexander is clear about how he wants pronouns to be discussed in the piece. And he wants us to understand, quote, "who I was in the moment when I was being abused." And again, we think about the sort of transition from, what that must be like and how scary and kind of isolating potentially that might be. So the article discusses how Jorgensen groomed her, isolated her, tried to gain her trust, broke down her boundaries regarding sexualized comments and much more. Again, Kim Shore really lays out like the different ways coaches can break athletes' boundaries. For example, like doing their hair, or telling them how they look in a suit. Like there are just many ways to do that. Jorgensen threatened Alexander's career and Olympic aspirations if she rebuffed Jorgensen in any way. The article details many incidents of rape, groping, forced oral sex, etc., that Jorgensen forced Alexander to do even after he'd begun transitioning and was dating a woman. Alexander credits his now fiance, Julia Vincent, who is a former volunteer diving coach at University of Kentucky and also a two-time Olympian, for supporting him during this time. Jorgensen finally stopped. I mean, Jorgensen did this with Alexander for years and finally stopped when Alexander threatened to go to the police. Now, it's worth saying that this is not a chance to victim blame and wonder why didn't Alexander threaten to do this earlier? Because that is not a question for at least for I think that we should be asking. This is an issue. This is something for a victim needs to ascertain on their own. Because we don't know what kind of dangers might arise from telling people. We don't know, you know, we're just not in this situation. And victim blaming is a way to shield, protect, and support sexual predators. So none of that here. Now, the third person in the lawsuit is a former swimmer and team captain who was groomed similarly to Alexander, where Jorgensen broke down her boundaries, asked sexually explicit questions, and groped her. And this one incident where he groped her. And after the incident where he groped her, she sent Jorgensen a text that I would struggle to send even today, just in the sense of its clarity of thought, of purpose, is just really remarkable. So she said, quote, "You have a position of power over me and touching me, asking for sexual favors and asking sexual questions is unprofessional. I do not want you to pursue me in any sexual or harassing way again," end quote. I mean, talk about an example of how one might do this. I mean, I just think about who I was, at 18, 19, 20, 21. And it was not this. I mean, it's just really like blows me away. Now after she sent this text, he convinced her to get on the phone with him and he cried to her on the phone and also offered her a coaching position on the staff on the promise that he would not do again, which she accepted. And article says she did not know this was a pattern. So again, this whole idea of like grooming someone over the cycle of being an athlete and then transitioning to being a coach when also, you know, I was talking about transition earlier, you know, gender transition with respect to Alexander, but what also is going on here, and you know this if you are an athlete, and you also know this if you are have done other kind of professional transitions in your life. The transition from being an athlete to a coach can be really, really hard. And that this thing that you have spent like so many waking hours thinking about training your body, you're eating all of these things to suddenly like not be there anymore. That can be a really scary thing. I mean, there's a reason why in 2021, during the height of the pandemic, there's a reason why athletes really struggled mentally because they were so used to having their training schedule and, you know, being involved in their sport and in the way of being an athlete. So yeah, I just think that's worth mentioning. So there are a couple more things that I'm going to mention and then I'm going to wrap it up here. So to go back to the timeline, now I mentioned that August 2019 was when the two San Jose State people contacted their Title IX office to kind of pass along this message to University of Kentucky Title IX office. So in April 2023, we're jumping forward quite a bit, according to a school compliance officer, quote, "We were just getting tons of complaints from athletes about violating NCAA rules over punishment swims and required practice overages." And he had apparently been suspended for similar violations in 2021-2023. So this is about NCAA compliance, which is usually a compliant, if I understand correctly from when I was at UF, within a lot of athletic departments, and I think probably all athletic departments, there might have to be like a mandated compliance officer or someone whose job it is to try to ensure that all teams are complying with NCAA rules in all manners of way and all kind of ways. This is not a Title IX complaint. Spring 2023 wore on, word of the compliance review spread and more alumni contacted the school about his conduct. And there's some information about people were contacting Title IX and Title IX was giving some misleading and or confusing responses about whether they were going to be gathering information from people after Jorgensen resigned. And in mid-May 2023, a former staffer that he'd assaulted in 2013. So former staffer that he'd assaulted 10 years earlier reached out to Alexander on Instagram, and they eventually shared their experiences and discussed how to stop him from working with others. This in mid-May 2023. And then around October 2023, the former team captain and assistant coach I mentioned earlier, she went to go report what happened to the Title IX office at University of Kentucky, which it seemed gave her a pretty discouraging experience. And so she decided to go to US Safe Sport. And then Safe Sport put him on their list in November 2023 that I mentioned earlier for unspecified misconduct, I think was the phrase. Ooh, so that's where we're at now. By the time this comes out, there very well may be additional information. And I'm expecting at some point a really vociferous defense from Riley Gaines, from Icons. Especially as the NCAA is heading into a board meeting this spring. And I'm guessing with this lawsuit, like the NCAA is anti-trans. And my guess with this lawsuit, this Icons lawsuit, sorry, not the lawsuit against University of Kentucky, but this Icons lawsuit is going to be used as like pressure. NCAA is going to choose to feel it as pressure to strengthen its anti-trans rules. There's also the NAIA also enacted really, really strict anti-trans rules. I haven't had a chance to look at them. I'm just getting through the weeks in this semester. Just truly, you know, it's horrific stuff. And it's like yet again, we have this confluence of sexual violence and transphobia that's just as awful. It's just awful. This stuff is going to, it stays with people for the rest of their lives, even if they're able to afford to get, therapy, you know, they have a trusting circle around them. Like this doesn't go away. So anyways, I think I'm going to end there. I hope that this was informative. If people have thoughts, I look forward to hearing them. Productive thoughts. If you are here to spew anti-trans hate, get the fuck out because I do not want to hear it. Like I've been saying, you know, here and there throughout this episode, if and when you hear anybody in your life that even if they're, you know, you think they're coming to you in good faith and I don't really understand, explain it to me. Or if they're straight up just like, you know, quote unquote, biological, you know, they misgender trans women and say biological males are, you know, taking opportunities away from women, blah, blah, blah. No, your consent is taking away opportunities from women. Sean Hutchinson taking opportunities away from people, just like Harvey Weinstein took opportunities away from people, right? Like just because this is happening within sports does not make it all that different from the Catholic Church, from Harvey Weinstein in Hollywood, from all of the other predators in other sports. It is still taking, it's taking like time in their life away from them. All right. I will wrap there. I hope this was informative. And thank you for listening. And like I said earlier, all the solidarity to victims of sexual assault, sexual harassment, to trans people who are particularly, who are particularly preyed upon more than cisgender women like myself, by largely cisgender, by largely white, by largely heterosexual men. Just all the solidarity and reiterate, there is a way for us to show solidarity with trans people, right? The sexual assault is part of white supremacy. It is part of our history. It is a way to show dominance and power. These fights are absolutely linked. I encourage people, please, please start sharing information in support of trans people because they need it. We need it. You know, they are part of our society, just like we are part of theirs. And if we want the liberation of all people, that also means trans people, along with Palestinian people, as we've been talking about this spring, especially. So solidarity to all, and I'll talk to you later.